Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Well, good morning, live from the State Fair. This is NPR News, and today we're going to talk about the way the journalists you hear on the air, all of us, do our work, but especially the work you hear on Morning Edition, on the way to work, and on the way home with me on All Things Considered. I'm Tom Crane, usually on during All Things Considered, but happy to be out at the Minnesota State Fair at the NPR booth, where it is sunny and 62 degrees, and the pork chop smoke seems to be coming from the south-southeast this morning, so it's not too much of a problem here at the booth. Now, if you've ever found yourself listening in the car, in the kitchen, wondering, why did they do that story? Why did they do that story that way? Why didn't they ask this question or that question? Well, you need to know that someone at NPR is doing the same things. Elizabeth Jensen is the ombudsman or public editor, and she joins me now here at the fair to talk about her work, and her work is about everyone at NPR and the way they do their work, and that's the work you hear on public radio. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you. My pleasure. Great to be here.
It's good to have you here at the fair, braving the crowds and the unknown. For someone who hasn't been here before to the Minnesota State Fair, there is a lot of unknown to discover, isn't there?
It's great. I love it. It's fantastic.
So first I want to get to the name, the problematic nature of this name, Ombudsman.
Yes.
Has there ever been thought to changing it to a more inclusive name, such as Ombudsperson?
Ombudsperson, right.
Yeah. So because that's your official title on your website,
the official title is the Ombudsman, indeed. Yeah. Most other news organizations, those that still have the role, actually, and we can talk about that later.
Yeah,
but,
right. There aren't many, actually.
Right. I'm one of the last, I think I am the last full-time in the United States. But most of them have moved to public editor.
Right.
And I prefer that just because it emphasizes the public nature of my role. So my role is to connect the public to the newsroom, and I actually don't have any editing privileges there. I can't tell the newsroom to do anything, but I am very much focused on the public and the questions and concerns that the public has.
Okay, and that's where a lot of your columns online originate, where you check in on a different subject or topic.
Right.
So give us your background in journalism. How did you come about to get to this public editor stage?
Sure. I studied journalism at Northwestern. I have a master's degree in international relations, but somehow I ended up writing about the media, television, radio, for my entire career. So I kind of got off on that track. Actually, one of my very first stories I wrote was back in the mid to early 80s. I was working for a trade publication, and NPR, National Public Radio, as it was called then, was about to go under financially. And that was actually one of the very first stories I wrote. So it's fun to circle back. So
what an irony. You wrote the story about the financial crisis back in, what was it, 81
or 82?
I think
84. I think it was 84, 85 was the meeting I was at. Right.
Okay.
So
I
went on to a newspaper career. I worked for the Wall Street Journal, the Los Angeles Times, and then for the last 10 years before I went to NPR, I was covering public media as a freelancer for the New York Times.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I think they wanted someone sort of who knew public media but wasn't really in public media, right? Because that's sort of the challenge of the role, is you have to be an insider-outsider. So you're paid by NPR, but really you're there to put a critical eye on the journalism of NPR.
And so we'll get to that and how that goes over. If I know newsrooms and the people who populate them, there are a lot of strong opinions.
Sure.
They're not always like, well, what did you think? Tell me more about the problems with that story.
Right.
That doesn't come naturally.
Right.
And and you have to do that. So we'll get to that. But I want you can join the conversation now. If you've had any questions ever about how things work, why they sound the way they do on Morning Edition, on All Things Considered, we should say Elizabeth deals with NPR News from Washington and not our newsroom here at Minnesota Public Radio. But we, you know, we have a kindred, we share a kindred approach, I think.
Absolutely.
And values, similar values. So here's how you join the conversation. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828 or on Twitter. I can see them. Select tweets at Tom Cran. Tweet me at Tom Cran, C-R-A-N-N, on Twitter. And we're talking with Elizabeth Jensen, the public editor of NPR News. I'm going to refer to you that way from now
on
as the public editor.
That's great.
So does NPR, or the editor's desk, or whoever's in charge of news, it's Christopher Turpin, right, at
That's
the top of news, do they say to you, I think you need to look into this story, we're not happy with the way it went, or does it come from listeners and online readers?
Right, so it very much originates with me. So I respond to sort of the issues that are being raised, again, in an email. So there's an email that you can contact my office, contact the ombudsman. There's a link online.
Okay.
I get people who tweet at me, Facebook. We have a good Facebook community. And so people raise issues there. There are issues that do come up, sort of general journalism. I mean, I've been a journalist for a long time.
Right.
There's a robust conversation that goes on about sort of journalism. And I do get ideas from inside the newsroom, but they don't tell me what to do. So I'm completely independent from the newsroom. I report to the CEO.
Okay.
He's totally hands-off. He doesn't tell me what to do either. So I can write or not write. I am entirely independent to pick the issues that I talk about. But I will say that I think in some ways the newsroom and my office, we're all on the same page in the sense that everyone wants good journalism, right?
Right.
So we're all dedicated to sort of putting out the best journalism we can. And yes, sometimes people get defensive when you come to them and say, this didn't really work, or listeners are raising questions, or why did you do it this way? People get defensive. I get it.
Yeah.
I've been on the other side.
Right.
But ultimately, I think if you look at the big picture, I think we're all really on the same page and sort of trying to make NPR's journalism the best that it can be.
So let's take a for instance or two, and you write about them online and people can read them. But how does it work? You start getting calls or emails about a story or an interview, and you say, hey, there's sort of a consensus building here with listeners. I ought to look into this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, and we have a number of columns that are in the works all the time. So, you know, it's rare. I mean, sometimes I will write about an individual interview that pops up. But a lot of times I'm sort of trying to figure out what is the broader issue here. So this interview may have been not worked well, and I may be getting calls and emails about it, but what is the underlying problem that sort of led to this issue, if you will?
Okay, right. And so you don't work with the editors. Are you involved in, let's say, the editorial meetings? Are you there?
No.
You're not?
I can attend if I want.
Yeah.
And sometimes I do, depending on
So you don't necessarily know the path, the thinking that led up to decisions that are made always, because you're not in that chain between...
Right. Right. I'm definitely not in the chain. I have a mandate to go back and investigate how things came to be. And there is a culture at NPR that the editors in particular will cooperate with the ombudsperson, the public editor. They will sort of, you know, again, they don't always like it, but I've always found people pretty willing to talk. So.
And do you have any authority on, hey, this story missed the mark, we need to do a correction, or we need to put something else on the air to balance it out? Or can you make any of those calls?
I can't make any of the calls. I can certainly make the suggestions.
Okay. So the recommendations
and I often
are,
do, right. Yeah. So actually, corrections is an interesting issue because I've had some criticisms of how NPR handles corrections. So they've moved very much in, I don't know, the past couple of years, they don't do a lot of corrections on the air. So they tend to put the corrections on the website, which is fine, but there isn't always crossover between radio listeners and the digital readers. And if you don't know to look for a correction, you're not going
right.
to see it. So I've been critical in a number of columns about that practice. And the newsroom does what they want to do. But, you know, hopefully the force of your argument leads them to make some changes. And they have been doing more on-air corrections recently. I, you know, whether that's due to me or whether they just rethought, that's not for me to say. But right.
How long have you been doing this job at NPR?
I've been doing it for 3.5 years.
3.5 years. Mm-hmm. And so were you around? I host All Things Considered here, and I remember more frequent, well, they used to call letters,
yes.
quaintly letters,
yes, right.
and then, of course, they became
right.
comments and emails and then tweets. And in that segment on All Things
yes.
Considered was often a chance for people to respond and or
yes.
At the end they'd say, and another note, we said this and we meant that,
right?
Whether it was correction or clarification or whatever. That's not on anymore. The
no.
letters segment, as it were, what happened there?
Well, that was that they just moved to sort of get rid of them, actually. They don't do letters anymore, as you note, and the corrections are online. I think they felt that it was that they could use the time better for more news and,
okay.
and to get more interviews. And so
yeah.
I think that was the thinking. Again, that started to happen before I got there.
Right.
There were still a few letter segments when I got there, but very few. So periodically there are people in the newsroom who would like to bring them back.
Yeah.
I think the thinking right now is that they probably are not going to, but
because of the time. The time is valuable.
I think the time is very valuable,
yeah.
right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So and you know, and I also like longer interviews, and I think, you know, one of the hallmarks of public radio is that it's really, you have the time to do longer interviews, to dig in a little deeper into
right.
what's really going on, and so it is always a balance. I understand that.
Elizabeth Jensen is our guest here on NPR News, talking about the way NPR does its work, goes about its journalism, and as I say, at Minnesota Public Radio News, we share values, we share approach, we share even many of the methods as well. And I want to get to some specifics. You can join our conversation 651-227-6000, 1-800-242-2828, or tweet me at Tom Cran as we come to you from the Minnesota State Fair talking about the work of journalism very much in the forefront, in the spotlight right now. So you have a because he's come to talk to us, too, the NPR Newsroom, a standards and practices editor.
Yes.
And when I hear standards and practices, I think of old either Johnny Carson or David Letterman referring to them as the censors at networks,
right.
you know,
right.
standards and
right.
practices.
Right.
You can't do this joke. You can do that.
Right.
What does that person, his name is Mark Memmott, do
right.
and how does your work overlap with mm-hmm. standards and practices?
Right. So Mark is terrific. He likes to say sort of he's inside the newsroom.
Okay.
He's very much making all those calls that we talked about. I'm outside the newsroom. I do work closely with him in the sense that listeners and readers will come up with corrections. And there is a pathway to sort of send them directly to Mark, but sometimes they'll come to me first.
Mm.
So I work with him in that sense, and if I see a correction that I think hasn't been made that I, you know, that listeners and readers have raised, I'll flag it, and he and I will talk about it. And so, yeah, but he's the one who's actually setting the policy, making the calls. When the journalists are coming to him and saying, can I say this on the air or not? He's the one
right.
who decides all that. So,
and how we phrase that. And
right. Exactly.
He recently said, we're making too many mistakes. We must start
yes.
CQing. You have to explain
yes.
this. It's a Latin term. How do you say it? Cadit questio?
I'm not a Latin.
No, nor am I. But does it mean the dispute is over? In other words, what is CQing? Double, triple checking everything?
Right. It's an old copy editor's a note. So if you send your reporting your article to your editor, and you want to indicate that you have double-checked the last name and it's spelled correctly, yeah. or you put a CQ after it, sort of in brackets.
Oh,
or
this has been checked.
This has been checked.
This has been
right.
checked. And right. and is there a sense that wasn't going on the way it should at
it
NPR?
Was not. So
it was
there
not.
Were, there were
okay.
about 100. So you don't really do CQ in a radio, right? So it's a little bit, you know, NPR
right.
is a little bit of a... an interesting culture because it really started as radio.
Right.
You can't CQ on radio. You're often talking, yes, you sometimes have a script, but often, like now, you're
yeah.
talking...
I've just got an outline. And
right, exactly.
I could get your name wrong or your title wrong on the air live, as happens.
Right,
you know,
but also
yeah.
the spelling of a name doesn't matter on the radio.
That's right, exactly.
right, but so when NPR is doing much more digital work now, and we have, there's a robust NPR.org website, and so it matters, how, you know, if it's someone's name is spelled right or wrong. So so he's trying to put in place sort of a culture to cut down on the number of mm-hmm. Of such errors. So they were running about 100 a month. His goal was to get down to, I think I wrote that column in June, so
right.
he's trying to get down to 50 a month by October. So
okay.
I don't know. So I will check back in October and see where they are.
And you know? And those sorts of errors would be, in other words, if a name is spelled wrong online, that's not something that you'd hear Ari or Audie then say on the air. We regret the error that we spelled somebody's name wrong online, right?
No. I mean, no, right. So the errors that I would like to see them correct on air are bigger errors.
Mm-hmm.
There is one issue that that I've been very concerned with. And I'm trying to get the newsroom to acknowledge is they do what are called stealth edits.
Right,
so
blading is another
is an old radio term.
Right,
right.
Let's talk about what that means. If the I'm going to describe it as best as I understand it, the show's going out 3 o'clock our time, 4 o'clock Eastern.
Okay,
in that half hour, something there's an error made.
Right,
and. The next time it's on, 2 hours later,
right, it gets
for what they call the rollover, right. it gets rebroadcast, mm-hmm. and
right.
then they'll just snip that error out,
right.
they'll blade it out.
They'll blade it, and the blading comes from the old days when radio was done really on tape.
Right. And you used a razor blade to edit that part of the tape.
You would use a razor blade, and then you would tape the tape back together again.
Yeah.
So
literally, we did that,
yeah.
yes.
So it's a lot easier to do these days digitally. It's good. So on the one hand, it's good because you don't want the error to be repeated.
Right.
So that's good. We all agree that that's good. Where it gets tricky is I will hear from a listener who will say, I know I heard... you know, whoever
right.
it was, say this, and it was an error. And now NPR is very good. They publish transcripts online. But they only publish the transcript of the final rendition of the interview. So if something has been bladed from the interview, it doesn't show up in the transcript. So I'll hear from someone who will say, I know I heard them say that, and I know it was wrong, and where is it? And so then I'll have to go back and... we can check the raw audio from the, you know, from the first feed,
right,
if you will.
Right.
But what I've been trying, and Mark Mehmet has been trying to encourage the newsroom to do, is to actually put a note in the transcript, in the final transcript, that says, you know, we corrected this.
When it originally aired, it said this, and
right.
we've corrected it since then.
Okay. Because otherwise, you know, some listeners will say, you're gaslighting me. I know I heard this, but it's not
yeah.
there.
And right. yet, on the air with a live show, having, you know, we do the same thing here in,
right.
in Minnesota, rarely, but we've had, if you have a conversation with a reporter and then something new comes in, you record that part of the conversation for the next time it airs.
Right. Right.
But you don't say on the air, well, you know, since we broadcast
right.
this 58 minutes ago, we have new, because it just
right.
it's cumbersome,
of
and
course.
You just want to get the right stuff on.
Of course. I just what concerns me are sort of major errors. I
yeah.
mean, lots of little things get, you know, bladed or changed all the time, or, you know, someone gets called Joe and it's really John. I'm not talking about that. I think
yeah.
for me, it's the sort of bigger issues that, you know, it feels a little bit like they're being swept under the carpet.
The carpet, and yet at the same time, there is an effort made, I know, in our newsroom to make sure it is right. When it airs
sure.
again.
Of course.
And sometimes it's something that we say, you know, well, has the governor responded? Well, no, we haven't had a statement.
Right.
And then since that right. airs, you do get a statement. So you re-record that part or do that
right.
part live and say,
right.
And now we've heard from whoever, the governor or whatever.
Right,
yeah.
exactly. And I do think you know, news is an ongoing process, right? So not everything is known at the time you're writing something or broadcasting something. And so, you know, sometimes the story's going to change, and it might change substantially over the course of 2 or 3 hours. That doesn't mean it was wrong when you first aired
it. That's right. So. That's right. And also there's the issue as well of that we sometimes hear from listeners, well, you didn't ask about this, you didn't ask about that, you didn't put this in the story, you didn't put that in the story.
Right.
And they'll say that that story then is incorrect, is false. And my answer is, depending on what it is, incomplete doesn't necessarily mean it's inaccurate. It's just so you can only include so much.
Exactly. And the hope is that if you know, if there's a perspective that's missing, I mean, the great thing about radio is you can come back later. So I do hear from listeners, you know, oh, I only heard an interview with the Republican.
And
why was there no Democratic response? And often the, you know, the Democrat is, you know, wasn't available that day. And so she'll come on the next morning.
That's right. Or over time, you hope that right now in a political season, that over time there's balance between the candidates.
Right.
You're listening to NPR News live from the Minnesota State Fair, hence all of the hurly and the burly, the background noise and the pork chop smoke, which you can't smell on the radio. Elizabeth Jensen is kind enough to be here with us to talk about how NPR in Washington does its work. She is the public editor, the person who is responsible for sort of overseeing the standards and practices when it comes to public response, public, I hate to just put it as complaint because there's more than that, public reaction to the news.
I get very thoughtful questions from listeners and readers who really want to talk about sort of why. So I think part of my job is just transparency. I think transparency is a big issue these days. I think people have lots of questions about how journalism works and legitimate questions, because I don't think we as a journalism business, as a community, have always done a good job in recent years in explaining how we go about our work. So part of my job is just, it's not just complaints. It is sort of saying, this is how this piece got on the air, or this is why you're hearing what you're hearing, or think about it in this way. So sometimes it comes across as defensive of the newsroom. I my job is not to defend the newsroom, but I do try and sort of demystify it, if you will.
Okay, so demystifying it. Let's get to some of the issues of late. And there have been a lot of them, because you write about them on a regular basis.
Right.
First, I want to ask you to join the conversation, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828 if you want to be on the air, or just tweet your question to me at Tom Cran. And here's Bruce in Northfield says, I always made sure my statistics students knew that the plural of anecdote is not data. The postmodern emphasis on story makes good radio, but it's not a good way for us to reach consensus, nor to make good decisions. So how can NPR, and I assume NPR, since you're here, Elizabeth, how can we push back? And that's a good point. In other words, I think what he's saying there is, if you have two or three different people's stories, that does not mean that that's a consensus or they're representative of a larger trend, or
Right. So... Right, so if you take that sort of to its extreme, you end up with false equivalence, right? So you, so there's been a lot of talk about that with the climate issue, right? So if you have 98% of the scientists are saying it's X and 2% are saying it's Y, you can't just sort of put both on and let the audience figure it out for themselves.
Right.
So I don't think it's the journalist's role to bring about consensus per se, but I think it is the journalist's role to accurately present the facts and not just sort of put on talking points and let the talking points compete.
Let's talk about false equivalency, and that came up in perhaps the biggest flashpoint, because it was a flashpoint outside of NPR. I read about it in the New York Times. An interview that was done for Morning Edition, Noel King did the interview, with a white supremacist by the name of Kessler.
Jason Kessler. That's right.
There was a lot of reaction to that, and I want to dig in on that and the decision-making and all of that. So The Columbia Journalism Review also checked in, and they put it well, so I'm going to use their phrasing. They said, does an interview like this provide oxygen to fuel the fire, or does the sunlight of it, the attention on it, disinfect?
Mm-hmm.
And even in our newsroom, there have been discussions that along the lines of, when you put someone like that on the air that has what most people would consider noxious views, dangerous views, that just, you know, the old phrase, giving them enough rope to hang themselves. Mm-hmm. Put that on and most listeners will say, well, that's noxious. I reject that. But there are people, and I've heard from one of them on Twitter this morning, who say it just gives them a platform.
Mm-hmm.
You had these discussions at NPR, too.
Right, absolutely. Right. So the newsroom did do this interview. There was a great deal of debate in the newsroom about whether it was appropriate or not. Some of the facts to know, and I tried to sort of explain all this in a column I wrote about this, was...
A long column. It's very,
very long column.
No, and it's not, I'm not criticizing its length. I'm saying there was a lot to chew on, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. So it was... They talked to him. So it was part of a series of reports leading up to the second march in Washington, the Unite the Right march in Washington.
But and it was around the anniversary, the first anniversary
of Charlottesville. Right, the Charlottesville march. So and the same person, Jason Kessler, had been organized both events. And so they were really trying to tell a story. The narrative was across a week. I think listeners who only heard the Kessler interview didn't realize that, right? So they didn't realize that it was part of a long narrative story, trying to get at the roots and explain sort of where this came from and what was going on. So that's, you know, admirable in the newsroom. So the question is whether the interview with Mr. Kessler should have been a part of that narrative, or if that story would better have been told just as a reported piece.
Right.
So NPR, for better or for worse, has and we can talk about that later if you'd like, but they've really moved towards a format where they're prioritizing, putting a priority on interviews.
The newsmaker interviews.
The newsmaker interviews, right? They feel that, you know, it's important to hear people in their own words.
Right.
And that listeners can, again, figure it out for themselves, sort of what someone is saying and understand.
That, and that the putting on of somebody, I get this a lot, when you put somebody on the air and then somebody disagrees with their views or finds them or finds their theory to be empty or whatever.
Right.
And so they assume that you put them on because you are a proponent or the station is a proponent of that theory.
Right.
And sometimes, no, we're putting on a lot of different views with a lot of different people, ideally, some of whom it doesn't matter whether I agree, disagree, whether the newsroom, we don't all vote like, well, 8 out of 10 of us agree, so put this person on the air.
Right.
And sometimes you put them on because you say, That theory seems. Let's see how they defend it.
Right.
You know, a study or something scientific or sociological study. But this is a little different, right?
It's a little different, right?
This is a white supremacist, an avowed, unapologetic white supremacist.
Absolutely.
Right?
And how you heard that interview depended on who you are, frankly. You know, I mean, if you're one of the people who is under attack by these groups, then you're going to hear it very differently than if you're at a little bit of a remove from that.
Right.
So NPR interviewed him on a Tuesday. It was taped. It was not live.
Right.
The interview lasted about an hour. They came up with 7 minutes that they cut out of it that they put on the air. As I wrote in my column, I had some concerns with the specific clips that they chose. He talked about some things that really had some statistics that have been discredited.
That have been discredited, debunked.
Right, yeah. And there really wasn't time in that 7 minutes to get into that entire sort of why those statistics have been discredited, and so that was part of my concern was, you don't want to be broadcasting misinformation, and so anyway, the host did push back, but I just had some concerns about how it was executed, but I think there's a very robust debate, as Columbia Journalism Review highlighted, about whether to put someone, put someone on the air. I mean, I do push back a little bit at the idea that it's a platform. A platform to me means you're going on Facebook and you've got free time to just say whatever you want, or we're just broadcasting your rally live. It's not. I mean, it was a standard interview.
Interview.
It was a journalistic interview, and Noel did push back. So,
but that is a phrase that is used in all sorts of contexts.
Yes.
You see it, I see it in email responses. Well, you gave that person a platform.
Right.
But that said, are there positions, or are there, there are accepted norms in society, and are there people whose opinions would be so kind of outside of the norms, people who advocate, well, if you get a disagreement with somebody on the road, you should get out and just murder them, there are things that
right.
we decide, well, no, we're not going to put that on the air. So where's the line at NPR?
Well, I can't speak for the newsroom on where that line would be. Again, I sort of go back to, in this specific case, going back to what the newsroom said, was you have an event, you have a rally, you had a rally that took place in
organizer of the rally.
You have another rally that is taking place sort of near the White House, upcoming. So the interview aired a couple days before that Sunday rally, which turned out not to be much of a rally. But anyway, so there was a reason, there was a thinking. It wasn't just giving someone sort of with these views a platform.
Yeah.
It was sort of trying to tell a story of why you are seeing and hearing this, on
how,
the air.
How would it have been done better?
Right. I it's a little hard to explain because I heard the entire hour-long raw audio. The interview
which
from
listeners
which
don't
which
hear,
listeners
get
don't get
yeah.
to hear. Right. I thought that there were other questions. I thought she did a very good job in the interview, and I just think
you think there were other parts that could have been that might have been
right. There might have been more representative or sort of right.
And those are decisions that are made all the time between
Absolutely.
Editors, producers, the host,
right.
all of that.
Right.
Do you think, in the end, that it was handled successfully in the format that we call a host Q&A? In other words, the host interviewing someone, or did that need a more a fuller, complex, reported treatment?
Right. I'm on the fence about that.
I'm on
the fence. I mean, I certainly think it could have gone either way. Again, if you're NPR is putting a priority on these kinds of interviews, and I do think it's valuable to hear people say things in their own words. I think you get something of value out of that instead of sort of interpreting someone's words for them,
or summarizing or paraphrasing.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, but again, I would have chosen different quotes.
Right. So. 9:38 as we come to you from the State Fair here on Minnesota Public Radio News. Elizabeth Jensen, the public editor at NPR in Washington. You were saying, Elizabeth, as well, we don't hear on the air anymore. We haven't in many years, I'd say a decade, people saying National Public Radio.
Right.
It officially, the official name is now NPR News.
Yeah. Right, right. So a lot of people come to NPR content these days through the website, or they get it through Facebook and they click on a link. So they're not always listening to their radio or listening to their smartphones or a lot of times it's a broader organization
experience
than radio these days. And so a few years back, I can't remember exactly when they moved.
They changed it to NPR News.
Right.
We have questions online on Twitter. There's a theme developing, and someone right here at our State Fair booth with a question.
Hi, I'm Roberta from Minneapolis.
Hi, Roberta.
Could you comment on the diversity in your newsroom, racial, ethnic, religious, political diversity, and how you maintain a pretty broad base?
Very good question.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an issue that I've written about quite a bit, particularly about racial, ethnic, and gender diversity. So the newsroom is roughly 75% white. That number has been pretty steady for, I think, the past 5 or 6 years.
How has it changed, let's say, over the last decade or two?
Yeah, I have not gone back and looked, but, right. but so we've been tracking the numbers. I think one of my predecessors started. Mm-hmm. It's slightly more ethnically and racially diverse than it was, say, 10 years ago. But really, the numbers have been about static, and the newsroom is working very hard to sort of change that. Latina reporters, Hispanic reporters are particularly underrepresented in the newsroom. That's an issue that the newsroom has been working on. The newsroom is more female than male. The newsroom staff is... I can't remember the exact number. You can look it up in my column, but I think it's 56% female at this point, the last number. So we'll have new numbers out in a couple months. So those are all numbers that have to be tracked, that any business has to track, really. You have to report them for equal employment reasons, et cetera. So,
and are there internal goals or targets on, even if there aren't numbers, or are there numbers?
I don't think there are actual numbers. I think there's just an understanding that they would like to do better.
Have a more diverse newsroom.
Right, yeah. right. So you asked about political and religious. That isn't tracked. That's not something you would ask. We don't sort of have a political hiring test for reporters. It is important, of course, to have a diverse newsroom in all those ways, right? To have a very broad, diverse newsroom. So people at NPR like to say, diversity is really about covering your blind spot. So you want to be aware of everything that's happening in this country, and so you can understand it and report on it. And if you have a newsroom that is really all sort of made up of the same people who think alike,
same type of person,
right, and who have the same experiences and backgrounds, you're not going to you're going to miss stories, frankly. So
specifically in the Charlotte story, you use the term in one of your articles that NPR was sort of caught by surprise by the Charlottesville rally. I'm sorry, the Charlottesville story. Mm-hmm. And what would have caused that, taken by surprise? Is that a matter of diversity when it comes to
was diversity. I think it was a rally that really got violent very quickly,
Surprising. Mm-hmm. Yeah, surprising.
I think they weren't quite. Some people seemed to see it coming, and others didn't, so I think there was a little bit of a surprise there. But
I want to take a caller. Someone has been very patient here. Danny in Minneapolis. Danny's on line 5. Danny. What's your question for Elizabeth Jensen, the public editor at NPR?
Thank you. So as you know, President Trump keeps calling the mainstream media fake news, especially if they criticize him. So has that affected you the way you report the news? Thank you.
Okay. President Trump referring to the media as fake news.
Yes.
And how should you respond or NPR deal with it?
Right. It has become an issue. I've noticed it in the emails that my office gets. There are not everyone sort of takes, if NPR reports it, not everyone believes it, if you will. Right. And so I think it has become an issue, at least in the minds of some of the listeners and readers. I am a proponent of, you need to do the work. So you need to double down. Right. The work speaks for itself. But I do think you have to explain how the work came about. Uh-huh. You have to be very clear to separate opinion from the straight news. I'm happy that NPR in the past couple months has worked. So NPR doesn't do a lot of opinion content online, but they've made it much clearer now when they are running opinion content. I mean, I think you have to be very clear to separate all of that out. I think you have to sort of explain your work. I think you have to say, so I did a column earlier this week that explained how we get a lot of complaints that, I heard more Republicans on your air, or I've heard too many Democrats, and you're not balancing it out. So,
right. I want to get to that. Yeah, okay, last week. But, well, let's talk about that. Last week, I noticed Scott Simon, the host of Weekend Edition, tweeted out, if you are a Republican office holder, a Republican in Congress, I forget what he said, we want to talk to you about this week of news concerning President Trump. And we ourselves, cast the net as well for the Minnesota members of the delegation to speak and respond and had a similar response, it sounds like, too. Okay. But we did not then tweet it as Scott Simon did. Basically, hey, guys, talk to us.
Right.
We'd like to have you on. And that prompted a column.
Right.
Because Republicans were thin on the ground, at least speaking to NPR last week, right?
Right. Well, they weren't. Right. They were.
Right.
So I was trying,
they just weren't responding.
Yeah. Right? So I was trying to explain that, you know, sometimes people hear things for different reasons, right? So if someone doesn't want to come on the radio and talk to you, you can't force them to do an interview. So I was just trying to pull back the curtain a little bit and sort of explain that this is why sometimes you hear an imbalance. Overall, NPR does do a good job, I've found. We just tracked 6 months.
Yeah, tell us about that tracking.
Yeah, right. So we thank you to Annie Johnson, who works in my office, and to our intern, Janine Santucci. They both sort of went back and they tracked all of the interviews in 6 months worth of Morning Edition, and all things considered, and categorized sort of, you know, who was a Republican, who was a Democrat, who was an independent.
And, yeah, and I have it right here, the numbers.
Actually, I had more.
Do you, are these the latest?
I had more up-to-date numbers.
Yeah.
I think it was from January 1 through June 30th, it was 201 Republicans to 199 Democrats, and I think 8 independents. So it was actually amazingly balanced. I don't think that there's an obligation to sort of come up with
exactly
balanced
the same number.
Numbers. I mean, we
it
are
will depend on the news, and, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But over time, I think it does balance out. So.
We had a question to that effect that I saw that came in, someone on the phone, but they were in St. Cloud. I don't see it there, but I'm going to ask it as a I'll paraphrase what I saw. Someone from St. Cloud said it's their opinion that NPR is slants left, favors Democrats, and it's getting worse, is what this person said.
Right.
You hear complaints like that, I'm sure and others.
Sure.
What's your response?
Well, and frankly, I get not quite as many, but a good number of similar complaints, but from people who are opposing from arguing from the opposite point of view.
Who are on the left, who think it's too many voices from the right?
Too many voices from the right, or the interviews from the right, of people on the right have not been as critically, done, if you will. I think it's a hard news environment to operate now. I think we're all sort of, pretty politicized these days, and people have very, very strong feelings about politics and the political environment we're in. And I think, if you if you're only hearing one or two interviews, and it's not possible for every listener to hear all 4 hours of NPR content every day. I think it's hard. I do like to ask listeners to sort of look at the broad perspective of what NPR does. So.
We have another question from our audience here at the State Fair. Hi.
Hi, I'm Leslie from Bloomington, and I'm wondering if you could comment on the following. So many times when I'm listening to interviews, I hear the person who is being interviewed say something that is either not true, is not backed by anything, and the person who's doing the interviewing doesn't say anything. And I wondered if you could comment on why that's done.
Yeah. Sure, that's
talk about that. The host interview, yeah.
It's a very good question. So NPR, as I said earlier, has really moved to a format where it's doing many, many more of these live interviews. And it has been a challenge. The hosts are very well prepped, but sometimes you have a guest who comes on and just, is arguing talking points and says something wrong. So this was happening quite a bit, probably a year and a half ago. And so NPR did a couple things. They put in place a policy where they were very quickly correcting what happened for Tom called the rollover. So when it was being rebroadcast in the next hour, they would go in and they would really add in a correction to the interview. But that doesn't really work for the person who has heard
the original interview,
and it doesn't get corrected the next day. So there is a new policy. I think I heard one this morning, actually. So when guests are on, they'll save a little bit of time at the end.
For the reporter that covers that beat or topic.
Right, for the beat reporter to come on and say,
What
did you hear? And oftentimes it's just adding context, but it is a good place for if the producers or editors have heard a mistake in the live interview that they can at least insert the correction there. And I'm a fan of that. I know it has some drawbacks, but I am a fan of that in the sense that it gets the information corrected right away.
Right,
So, but I agree with you.
It's hard to do live when it is, and a lot of the interviews I'm hearing on both Morning Edition and All Things Considered, you know, I'm in the studio and I can hear it. That one's live.
Right.
And when it is live, it is hard unless have, and even the very best hosts at NPR, you can't have a command of every possible fact they may or may not, or every fact that they could fudge on.
Right.
And so sometimes we've done it where you record it, and then we double check.
Right.
They said something. Well, is that true? Is that not true? But that's something that that reporters have more time in putting a piece together than when you have someone on the air, sometimes in very short order.
I've been critical of NPR because I feel like they're doing too many of these live interviews or even taped interviews, but I just feel like they're doing too many of these interviews and not enough reported pieces. So a reported piece, it's much easier to get more facts in, first of all, but it's also... again, you can move off of talking points. You can avoid some of this misinformation. And to me, it feels that a little bit like the balance is off. And actually, I hear from a lot of listeners who feel that, too. So I've written a couple columns about that issue. And so I'm hoping that they'll, I don't know. we'll see where they go with it. But
you can see those columns online from Elizabeth Jensen, the public editor for NPR, with us on Minnesota Public Radio News at the State Fair. And I'm getting another tweet. Again, I said there was a theme here, and I want to dig a little more deeply in President Trump's attacks on the media.
Yes.
Here we have a president. We've always had an adversary relationship with presidents and reporters, right?
That's part of the role of the press, right?
But in this case, we have a president who is, at least in my time, far more vocal about his criticisms of the media in a blanket way.
Right.
That it's very bad news about me. It's fake news. How do those attacks, and then we saw that incident with a CNN reporter in a crowd there at a Trump rally where they were yelling and booing the reporter, and it's gotten to that. Has that changed anything about the way you do the work at NPR, and is it trickier then to cover the president because he's already set up this narrative that it's all going to be fake news?
Right. My feeling is it's old school, but I think you do the work, and the work has to be double checked, triple checked. You can't afford to make mistakes. Definitely these days, I do think that there is if you make a mistake, it's going to be pounced upon, and so I think you really have to double down and do what you always do. And I also think I just don't think it's productive to get in a fight with any administration.
As you know,
there's always been an adversarial relationship. This is not new. Perhaps the tenor of it is new, there have been adversarial relationships before, and the role of the journalist is to just really do the work and do the reporting and make sure that the reporting stands up.
Here is another question that's come up recently, and both our organization, Minnesota Public Radio News, and NPR, one um, a, SPJ Award, Society of Professional Journalism Award, a distinction for covering their own organization. Oh. And you had the issue at NPR of a leader in the newsroom accused of sexual harassment. Here at Minnesota Public Radio News, we had the story of Garrison Keillor and accusations against him. In both cases, that coverage won an award. But talk about the challenges, the trickiness, and the things that a newsroom has to go through to cover itself. Mm-hmm. We talked a little about it on the air during the Garrison Keillor situation.
Right. I have to say this is one place where I was very impressed with NPR. They have a very strong protocol in place for how David Folkenflik, who's the media correspondent, covers NPR. So he has a dedicated editor. That editor reports to a deputy managing editor. It's all very sort of kept within that framework.
Cordoned off, almost?
It's cordoned off. There's a firewall, you could call it. David works with his editor, and when they think that they have a story, they go to a deputy managing editor. Other people in the newsroom cannot be involved. If there is a conflict involving his editor or the deputy managing editor, then there is yet another protocol for having those two people recuse themselves so that the reporting is accurate, fair, and not swayed by any internal forces. So essentially, David covers the NPR newsroom just as he would cover anyone else's newsroom as the media correspondent. So it's a very tricky thing, you know. You're reporting on your colleagues, right?
And that also then means that he doesn't have any more access than a reporter from CNN or the New York Times.
Exactly.
Would.
Right.
So
exactly.
He can't have access to emails that would be sent to staff or use that. Right.
Right. So
or
there was an all-staff meeting that he did not listen in on, and then he went and reported. You know, he has his own sources in the newsroom, and he went and reported on that. Just as he would if it had happened at another news organization. So I have to say, I thought the reporting was good. I thought it was very good. So.
We are running short on time, just about a minute or so left. So tell me, why is your job needed at NPR and other news organizations?
Right. I wish more news organizations would have public editors. It is sort of a declining post. You know, there are plenty of critics out there. Social media has made it really easy to sort of bring up an error when NPR puts something on the air that's wrong. You know, social media is quick to react. It's a different role as the public editor. You're really sort of empowered to bring about change and look at these issues from within. I just think, you know, every news organization should have a public editor, but it is not to be for these days.
And how long are you staying with NPR? Is this a term, or are you...
It is. It's supposed to be. It's a term-limited role. They don't want you to get too friendly with the with the people in your, with your colleagues. So, and really by the end, you've sort of criticized everyone in some way, and they're all mad at you. So... Anyway, so, no, actually, everything's great, but my contract goes through the end of January.
Elizabeth Jensen, the public editor for NPR News, thanks so much for fielding our questions at the Minnesota State Fair as we come to you live here on Minnesota Public Radio News.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.